This is Meet the Millennials.
Hi guys, you're here with Cassie Loco.
Carl Loco.
Hi, I'm Rini Lee.
Hey, I'm Pastor Nathan from Hope Dealers.
And it's Pastor Kwame here from Hope Dealers as well.
Hi, I'm Ify Alexis Lee.
Hi, I'm Muyua.
And I'm Lola.
And you're listening to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennials.
Because it's honest conversations about things that the body of Christ is perhaps too scared to talk about.
And you young people don't know what you're doing with your life.
Welcome to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennial, a podcast that discusses our millennial matters from a Christian perspective with me, Elena Boateng.
And me, Esther OG.
So each week we host our friends and influencers in the Premier Gospel Studio for some honest conversation about faith, love, trends, the highs and lows. We basically navigate life together. I'm sure you can probably like recite this verbatim with me now.
You would think so, but no, I can't. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Premier Gospel. Use the hashtag MTM podcast to interact with us or email us at mtmpodcast@premier.org.uk if you send any hate mail back to sender.
Disclaimer every week. So today we are talking about parenting, and even though I'm collecting godchildren like soft toys, like literally, like every year I gain another godchild. I feel
Christmas
like
Christmas is gonna be peak.
It's a reflection on my character.
You remember that when you buy a Christmas present, yeah?
Do you know what I mean?
Of like 50 kids.
Honestly,
good luck with that, yeah.
I actually budget from the beginning of the year. I'm like, right, so my godchildren and all these presents. But yeah, so Esther and I are not yet mothers, but we've invited a couple to give us some insight into the wonderful world of parenting, because of course parenting is a big deal. It's a huge life shift, and as much as it's a blessing, I'm sure that it does come with a lot of challenges. Like for example, my mother still tells me that I'm a challenge. Today's issue was, you never put things back where you found them. Why are we still on this matter? I'm 27. Like,
exactly. Why are you still on this matter? Why are you still being told?
About my mother.
Why are you
about
still
me?
Being told?
Thank you. God bless your life. So in the studio today, we are joined by a lovely couple. Although they are fairly new to the parenting game, as most millennials are, they're almost parents to two kids under two. So that qualifies them to me, please. Esther?
They're qualified.
So they've joined us to talk about the highs, the lows, the rewards and the challenges of their parenting journey so far. Hashtag India meets Ghana. YouTubers Amit and Michelle Patel, welcome to Meet the Millennials.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
It's lovely to have you with us today. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good.
So your wedding highlights video is almost at 1 million views.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So the world, including ourselves, went crazy for your kente fusion.
Yes.
Did you expect your wedding to have as much of a, like, I don't know, to gain as much attention as it did?
I think it's weird. Like, we knew that it was quite a unique, it's quite a unique mix, right? So we knew that there will be people who would be interested, but we never expected it to get to
that.
So like
what
millions.
Happened? Like, was it like a Twitter post or something?
And then yeah, everybody... it was a Twitter post, which funnily enough was made by my friend while we were on honeymoon.
Yeah.
And she sent it to me and she was like, post it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll post it. Posted it and then it just went crazy.
So what was the picture?
It was a picture of us
at our engagement.
A picture of us from the wedding and a picture of us from when we were like in year 9 or year 10.
Because how long have you guys been dating? Well, now you're married, but how long have you been together?
Oh God,
12 years.
Whoa.
Wow.
And you are how old now?
25. Well, turning 26.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh my gosh. That is actually the meaning of childhood, sweetheart. You are the movies. Truly. But yes, so you got married on the 10th of September 2016. I've done my research. And by January the 19th, 2017, we had a video on your YouTube channel entitled Dropping the P-Bomb.
Yeah.
So it's fair to say you wasted absolutely no time.
No time at all.
Yeah.
And for people who might be a bit slow, what's the P-Bomb for some people?
Oh, pregnancy. Okay, oh, yeah, yes, sorry. Yes, true. Pregnant. But no, yeah, you dropped the peed bomb. But Michelle, I remember in the video you talked about being quite disappointed when you took a pregnancy test during your honeymoon and you weren't pregnant. So, like, were you trying? Were you actually trying to have children?
I was from the beginning. I always said that when they come, I'm happy to have them. So it was just kind of like, I could be pregnant now. Let's take a test. I could be pregnant now. Let's take a test. And then it was just like, when you take them and it's like negative, you kind of feel like, oh, it didn't happen.
But honeymoon is kind of early though.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they say. But I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know what it was. But I think sometimes it stems from the fact that because we've been together so long, a lot of people are like, once you get married, you want to like get to know the person more. Which is, I mean, fair enough. We could have waited a little bit.
Yeah.
But it did feel like, oh, we've kind of known each other forever now.
Yeah.
It's like, it'll be exciting to like bring up our own start our own family. Yeah. So I think, yeah.
I guess it's quite hard though, because there's kind of like two narratives, isn't there? There's like our Ghanaian parents and our Asian parents as well, being like, right, so as soon as you get married, you're going to have children straight away tomorrow, kind of thing. And then you also got the push from like other millennials or everybody else just being like, need to live your life, need to enjoy married life. Like everybody always says, well, at least a year, I need a year.
Yeah, yeah. I'm creeping.
One year. Just see my husband, just go traveling and just do everything that we want to do and see the world. And
why are you talking like that?
I've got no one in mind. But yeah, so it's like, how do you see that to be, kind of thing? Because obviously you've done it straight away.
Yeah, for me personally, like when people say, oh, I want to take a year because I want to do traveling or whatever, and that's great, like if you have purpose behind the year that you're taking out. But most times people say they want to take a year out, they're still working, so realistically, like, they'll only have one holiday in that year. So it's like, have you really traveled, or you've just gone and enjoyed one holiday?
Some people look like they're always traveling. Okay,
so I did an Instagram episode, so
yeah. So I think if there's purpose behind, like, yeah, you know, you actually want to take a year out, you want to see the world, you want to travel, so forth, that's great. But I mean, your normal annual holidays, we went to Ghana earlier this year with Ezra, and it wasn't like a hassle, it wasn't a problem. So you can still very much do those things and incorporate it into your lifestyle.
Yeah, like, I definitely say I understand that it probably does make things a bit harder to do what you would have done if it was just you two. But then at the same time, I wouldn't say that I would put it on hold just because, oh, I want to do something else. But I guess everyone's different in terms of what they want, so you can't knock it. So in the same vein, it's like people were telling us, no, you guys should wait, you're young. It's like, I don't know what I'm waiting for personally. Maybe someone else is waiting for something, but I'm not necessarily waiting for anything, so I'm just gonna go and do what I think suits our family.
But are there ever any moments when you're like, maybe we could have waited?
Honestly, I don't think I've ever had that moment
where it's like, oh gosh, I did this way too soon.
I don't think I've ever had that thought to be like, oh, I wish it wasn't.
But I think it also helps that we do have a lot of support from our family, so it doesn't. I feel like it might be different from someone who's not necessarily got the support around them, so they might feel like, I did do this too soon, and I'm by myself and I'm struggling. Whereas we've got that support from other people and quite a few other young people that have gotten married quite young and have had kids young, so we have that, I guess, support base there.
And I think even small things like going to church on a Sunday, on a Friday, a prayer meeting, anything like that, the fact that you can take Ezra and there'll be people there that will just take him, and you will get that. It's almost like you get 2 hours of like free time where you don't have to worry about him, and it also helps in terms of he then gets to interact with other people, so he gets used to, like, he doesn't naturally just kind of want to be with just you. He gets used to being with other people, which is then really helpful, because if someone else does babysit, it's like, it's not an issue.
He's not clingy.
He's not clingy.
Even though he is a bit of a clingy baby.
And whose fault is that? But no, did you both always want to be parents?
Yes, definitely.
And was that something you were very intentional about talking about in your dating stage?
I think so, yeah. We kind of laid out, like, the plan of how many children we wanted. So I have two siblings, so we're a family of three. Michelle has
three siblings,
so they're a family of four. So we always said, like, it would be somewhere either three or four. I think four's the perfect
number. Abby used to say that he wanted all our kids before we were 30. But now he's changed his mind.
That's doable. Five more years. Two more babies.
Now he's changed his mind, but I mean, that's what he used to say.
Yeah, it's true. That is true. I said I'd get married by 23 and I'd have my children by 30, so that I wouldn't be too old when they're, like, in their, you know, in their teenage years.
So did you get married by 23?
Yeah.
We got married. I'm going to get married by 30.
I'm going to get married when the Lord wills it.
Oh, well, well done. No, so actually, Amit, your reaction when Michelle told you that she was pregnant with Ezra was, well done. That might actually be the funniest. Why well done?
It was so funny when I found out, because I was working from home, and she called me, and I was sitting in the living room with my mum and dad.
Yeah.
And I just had to have such a reserved reaction because I couldn't give anything away, and I was not expecting it at all. So it was just kind of like, oh, what can I say that would fit into, like, the scope of Michelle being at work and me speaking to her? So I was just like, oh, well done.
Oh, wow. She'll message her afterwards and be like, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hope so, because I'll be like, well,
well done. Well, this isn't what I was expecting, but okay.
And Michelle, I know your dad was like, I'm so proud. You have made me so proud.
My dad was the happiest. At our wedding, mm-hmm. in his speech, the way he ended it was, don't keep me waiting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he repeated it three times. So wow. everyone left the wedding saying that, because wow. it's like, he was like, he's ready to do the school runs, he's ready to do this and that. So he was like so happy when he found out that we were pregnant. He was, even before we were going on honeymoon, he was like, yeah, don't disappoint. I was like, okay, Dad, this is a bit much, but okay.
Wow, the pressure. So how does he feel now that he has almost two grandbabies?
Oh, he's over the moon.
He's loving it.
Like literally
absolutely
over the moon.
But despite the fact that you are almost parents of two, you also have an amazing platform, Women Meet Motherhood. No,
Woman Meets Motherhood.
Right. Yeah, Woman Meets Motherhood. So tell us a bit about that.
Okay, yeah. So basically, it's like a YouTube channel where basically I just wanted women to come on the show and share their experiences, because I felt like once I had Ezra, it was, to be honest, it was one issue that just kept getting to me. Mm-hmm. That he would just, like, he had really bad acid reflux, mm-hmm. and he would just throw up everywhere, like, wow. on everyone. So it's kind of like, I didn't want anyone to hold him, because it felt like, oh gosh, she's probably gonna throw up on you. It's really embarrassing. And it was just that one thing that kept getting to me. And I think I went to a wedding with him, and I met a friend of mine who had recently had a baby, and she was like, oh no, my daughter does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And she did it right in front of me. I was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. Whereas like other people will tell you, oh, it's because you're feeding him too much, it's because you're doing this, you're doing that. And so you just feel like, oh, maybe I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
But the fact that I had that conversation with her made me think maybe there should be a platform where other women can say what they're going through, and someone can watch and be like, oh, I'm not doing it wrong.
Yeah,
it's just every baby's different, mm-hmm. but there's something that I can identify with.
Yeah.
So me and my cousin started it in September of last year. And it's just literally been like, we've heard so many amazing stories through it.
Wow.
And like so many people have reached out to us to say, oh my gosh, how encouraged they were by mm-hmm. just listening to that. So I feel like, yeah, that's just what I wanted to do with my experience. And I feel like it's just, it helps everyone.
Yeah. It's really good, man. It's amazing. Like, I've watched a few of your things, and you've done stuff on contraception, on unplanned pregnancies, miscarriages, and it's conversations that people need to be having. And like you yeah. said, it's always so important to have somebody to be able to relate to as yeah. well, because you're not alone. Like, even with this podcast, like, hopefully parents will be able to see, oh my goodness, like, okay, so my struggles are not just me, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But Amit, what is it like seeing the love of your life carry your child?
I think it's beautiful. I think it's quite difficult to, like, so when you're dating, you always like have that mindset of, yeah, you know, we're going to become a family and everything's going to be rosy and everything's going to be great. And mm-hmm. when you actually become parents, you realize that you don't really know what to do, and you kind of learn on the job as you go. And
mm-hmm.
you then start to see like how many things, like from a mother's perspective, it's just natural instinct. And I think that's really beautiful to see.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful.
So what are some of the anxieties though as you're preparing to become parents? Because I think to this day I still love the fact that I can, you know, go and babysit my niece and then give her back to her parents. I'm not even joking. I still genuinely have anxiety about whether I will sleep through my children crying. Like, I just can't even get to grips with it at the moment. So like, yeah, what was that like in terms of, did you feel anxious before becoming parents?
I think you say the sleep thing, because I love my sleep. So I always thought, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm actually going to wake up while my child is crying.
Mm-hmm.
But God is so amazing in that, like, literally, if Ezra coughs in the night, I'm like, I'm it. Like, honestly, like, those things, like, you get so much fear about, you think, am I going to be able to do it right? But I feel like God just gives you those skills,
yeah.
and you manage, mm-hmm. you get through it. And it's like, I don't feel like you can ever do anything really, obviously, if it's like abuse or whatever, that's wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like you can do anything that's really wrong. You kind of have to do what you think is best for you and your child.
Yeah.
And I think it will kind of just work that way. But I feel like also it's just really important not to let other people's views like overshadow what you do or
yeah.
their judgment. Because I feel
yeah.
like that's when you can kind of lose it, if you're always comparing your child to someone else, or
mm-hmm.
sometimes even your parents say, oh, that's not what I did with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that thing can really get in your head. But it's like, I know that's not what you did with me,
yeah.
but this is what I'm doing with him,
yeah.
and it's working for us. So it doesn't
yeah.
necessarily mean I'm doing it wrong. I'm just doing it differently, Mum. So yeah. yeah.
And were you like hyper protective? Because when my brother, when my nephew was born, like he was like, oh, don't breathe near the baby. Like, you gotta be careful. Like, don't let your hair like touch the baby. I was like, were you just relax a little bit. But he was so like overly protective. Like, were you like that?
I don't think we were.
It's quite interesting because like, I feel like a lot of people in this day and age are really like overprotective and really like, oh my God, I don't want them, like there can't be any germs around here. And you sit back and think like when our parents had us, like they had none of this. They didn't have no antibacterial hand gel that everyone should come and apply before they touch your baby or anything like that. So yeah, I don't think we kind of had that mindset.
That's a really good balance though, because I think just the nature of how much resources there are out there.
Yeah.
I think that's what can be so overwhelming, because I saw my brother and my sister-in-law just read and read and read and read, and this is what you need to do, and this is how often, and the routine, and the da-da-da-da. And it's just like, at a point, it's like, but like you said, like, my mum didn't have this book, and I think I'm okay.
Yeah. I made it to adulthood.
I think I'm all right. So it's like finding that balance is really, really key.
And then you even think about how our parents' parents... You know,
well, I mean,
So I mean, they managed to cope absolutely fine without books or without all this like equipment or, you know, gadgets that they could use. So.
And there's so many things that change in terms of what the health professionals say you should do and shouldn't do, you should eat, what you shouldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that things are always changing. So you can't be, I guess you can't be so rigid when it comes to parenting.
Yeah.
So how do you decide like what's true and what's false? Like, how do you actually navigate the amount of resources there is and all the different theories?
I say trial and error. if I'm honest, sometimes it is just trial and error. Like, you might hear someone might say, oh, you should try this is good, and you try it, it's like, that's not my
it's funny actually, because with when Ezra was on breast milk, when we were moving him onto formula, that was probably the biggest trial and error session we've had, where we tried like every formula under the sun and he just was not having it.
Yeah, 6 months he came off the bowls, guys. So I had to breastfeed him. I couldn't leave him anywhere because it's like he's relying on the breast. So yeah, we tried everything.
He wasn't having it. And then one day my sister came over from America, and she has two kids as well, and then she was just like, oh yeah, let's try him on cow's milk. And he loved it. So he's never had formula. He just went straight from breast milk to cow's milk. And now, according to like books and papers and all that stuff, they say, oh, you shouldn't do that, you should go into formula and then onto cow's milk. I think cow's milk is like
one. Well, yeah, when they're one.
But
he
started
when he was 10 months old.
Yeah,
and he was fine. So
you see, you know, this is what I need to tell my brother.
You know,
he's like 3 days old. Oh, he can eat like KK. Like, why are you being all extra about it? Do you know what I mean?
With shit as well.
Yeah, Papa, you know, he could have managed it.
It's funny actually, because the first time that Ezra had KK was I can't remember how old he was, but he slept through the night.
He slept through the night.
He must have been about 6 months.
Yeah,
6 or 7 months. And he had some with Michelle's dad, and he slept through the night.
That's the way.
But yeah, have you ever felt too young? Or like, because the thing is, I don't think you'd ever maybe be too young, because they always say that wisdom, like youth is defined by wisdom. So I guess, have you ever felt like you weren't equipped enough? Like, did you ever feel like, do I even have anything to impart on a child?
That's a good question. I feel like when you... The moment you feel like you're too young is when, like, your older aunts and uncles and stuff kind of take the lead on how you should parent your child, because they feel like you're not old enough to be able to parent them.
Yeah.
And that's when you kind of feel like, oh, like, you know, you just feel awkward, because it's like, oh, am I really too young to, like, parent them? Should I just listen to what they're doing? So for me, when people bring that kind of vibe, that's when I feel like that's the sort of vibe I don't like, basically.
I feel like... I don't know if I've ever felt... I think, yeah, probably I felt it from that perspective. But at the same time, I feel like the one thing that you can give your child is love, and that it will come to you. And I feel like God teaches you more about his love once you have a child, so you learn more. So it's not necessarily like, oh, I needed something before I started. But it's like God is giving you more as you're going on. So I feel like that's what's really, really like opened my eyes about parenting.
And the most beautiful thing is that, like, if your child is ever upset or crying or whatever, they'll always ask for the mum and dad. Like, naturally, they'll only find comfort when they're in their mum or dad's arms, which is beautiful, because then when you're around all those aunties and stuff, it's like, they can't do anything to stop him. They end up having to give him back to you, which is like, yeah, see, I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. I want to explore that more, this idea of God teaching you more about his love through a child. Like, what do you mean by that?
So, like, I think it's just like, you never want them to experience hurt or like anything that necessarily, like sometimes I sit and think like the way I lived my life, would I want Ezra to live that same way?
Yeah.
And it's just like it teaches you about the way I guess God thinks about us in terms of, let's say like if we've sinned or we've lived a certain lifestyle, you'd never want your child to go back to that. So you kind of have that same love and protection for your child in terms of what they experience, what they know, what they don't know. And I think it's just also just like in terms of you wish you could protect them. Like when I remember when Ezra was born, it's like you wake up in the middle of the night just to check that he's still breathing, just check that he's okay. Like things like that, that it's just like, God watches us over us all the time. And I like, imagine what that's like for God. Like all of us are his kids.
Yeah.
And he wants to protect all of us. He wants to do everything in his power to like shield us from, I guess, all the bad things that happen in this world. So it's just like, things like that, that you just open your mind to think, what would God be thinking about the situation?
And even like sacrificial love, you know, the whole act of giving your only son. I think once you actually have a child, you understand the significance of what happened and almost like how much it takes to do that. And I think if you were to ask any human being, would they do that? They would categorically say no, because it's just not something that would sit right with you or, you know, align with how you feel. But it just shows, you know, how great and how awesome our God is.
Amen.
And it's amazing how that protective nature never goes away. Like, I am nearly 30 years old, and my mum comes into my room in the morning when she's going to work before me. And I'm she flicks my forehead, okay? She actually flicks my forehead and just wakes me up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, why are you doing this? It's my day to sleep in. And she's just like, I'm just checking you're okay. But why? No, why are you flicking my forehead to do this?
It's a Ghanaian thing. We've talked a bit about the practical in terms of preparation for parenting, that there's just so much out there that you kind of have to just pick and choose what you want to be involved in, what you don't. But how do you kind of like spiritually or emotionally prepare for parenting? Like, did you go through a process of that kind, or did you just kind of say, do you know what it is?
I think, well, for me, it was kind of just like, okay, God, you've given me this child. Give me the grace to raise this child. So it was literally just saying that prayer, even from the labour ward, I remember, like, because my labour wasn't the smoothest. And I remember, so they were going to take me in for an emergency C-section, and I was literally like, okay, God, you know what you're doing. Me and the baby are going to go in that room, and we're both going to come out safely. Like, it's just you just trust wholly on God, because you're human. You can't do everything. So even with things like waking up to check if he's okay, God never slumbers nor sleeps. So you have to rely on God on certain things. And it's like sometimes Ezra will be like he's almost about to do something that is just so dangerous, about to fall off something, and you'll find that God has placed you in the right position just to stop him from whatever he's about to do. So it's just things like that. Like, I would just say, fully trust God and just pray for that protection every single day, and God won't ever disappoint you. We're man, so we can't do everything, but that trust in God is what will keep you through, because you know there's always someone else that has that extra set of eyes on your child.
It's true.
Does that remove the anxiety for you?
Oh yeah, definitely, because I feel like otherwise Amit knows I'm kind of a paranoid person. If it wasn't for God, I think the things that I would be doing, I don't think I would sleep at all. So, definitely.
Even if, like, Ezra's got, like, a little cough and I'm like, okay, yeah, let's move him into his room. Michelle be like, oh, no, maybe he can sleep with us today because he's got a cough. I'm like, it's just a cough. Like, come on.
It's not her fault. was going to ask, so does it feel real now? Do you feel like, do you own that word, I'm a parent? Because loads of my friends are like, I still pinch myself. And their children are like 4. And she's like, I'm a mum.
I find it strange that we're parents.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal.
I do find it a bit strange. Like, it's weird. But at the same time, I now don't imagine my life before Ezra. Like, I find it strange that he wasn't at our wedding and things like that. I just feel like he's now a part of our lives. So like,
it makes me think, like, what did I used to do with my time? It's just like, what on earth did I used to do with my time?
Yeah.
Because now that I have him, it's like, all the time that I spend with him, when he wasn't there, what did I do?
So how has your life shifted? How has your time shifted?
I think for me, like, it's just really small things. Like, when you go to work and you come home, it's, like, something to look forward to. It's, like, you can't wait to, like, leave work and get home to meet him, to see him, like, to give him his bath, put him down. Things like that. It's just, whereas normally when you know, if you didn't have a child, it's like, oh, let's just get through Monday to Friday and let's look forward to the weekend. But now it's like daily you have something to come back and look forward to. And Michelle will text me like, oh, he's done this today, or, you know, oh, he started walking today, or, oh, he like kicked a ball today. Or so just small things like that, just like small milestones really like encourage you and keep you going.
I think my day to day has definitely changed in that I don't get lions, even though he's quite a late sleeper, which is good, but I would rather be a later sleeper, so for me it's still not a lion. So it's like you sort him out first before you sort yourself out. He eats before you eat, he showers before you shower, that sort of thing is like what changes. And like Amit says, like before it's like you have your 5-day working week and then it's the weekend. Like I always say, there's no such thing as thank God it's Friday, because you're a parent 24/7. So it's like it doesn't ever stop, so it's like a job all the time, I'd say.
That's true. And like, do you feel like everyone's understanding of that though? Because I know, for example, when my brother first had his daughter, I was like, okay, so are you gonna meet me on Friday, we're gonna have dinner and then we'll go and watch that thing. And he's like, you know, I can't just do those things anymore. Like, I'm like, oh, why? Like, can't you leave the baby with my sister-in-law? And he's like, no, like, we parent together, kind of thing. So it's like, sometimes it can be so hard for the externals as well to kind of understand that adjustment. How have you found that?
I think it's been a bit tricky sometimes. Like, people would make plans and then we would kind of be like, oh, we can't make it because of Ezra. And they're like, oh, can't you just go drop him at his grandma's, or, you know, something like that. Or can't one of you come? But it's like, even if you think about small things, like if you have a baby who's like 4 or 5 months old, you want to go, let's say you want to go to the toilet or you want to go have a bath or something like that. You can't just leave them there for that period of time.
No. Oh. This is information I didn't know.
Especially like if they're awake, then you can't just like let them lie there, you know. So someone needs to be there to watch them while the other one, you know, goes and relaxes. And also, like, say I go to work Monday to Friday, Michelle watches him. How bad would it be if the free time that I have, I then go out as opposed to be like, oh, Michelle, yeah, let me help you out and look after him so you can either go out or you can have a break or do whatever you want. So yeah, I feel like until some people live it, they won't realize how intense it is.
I think what I understood the day that my brother said to me that, you know, she can't feed herself, she can't clothe herself, she can't get herself up, she can't do anything for herself, she's solely dependent on us. And that's when I was like, the penny kind of dropped, and I was like, oh, okay, when you break it down like that, I'm starting to kind of understand. You know, but how do you share the responsibility of parenting? Because, you know, traditionally a lot of the weight falls on the women. How have you made it work for you guys?
It's, to be honest, that's a really good point, because funnily enough, when Ezra was born and I would like change his nappy or clothe him, like my mum who was a bit like, oh, why are you changing his nappy? Like, where's his mum? And for me, it was just a bit like, this is my child. What do you mean? Like, I'm equally a parent as much as his mum. So, of course, the responsibilities are shared, and we would both do whatever it takes to look after our child. So, for me, like, when I know after I went back to work after paternity leave and after a few weeks of annual leave, it was very much, okay, like, Michelle has to run the show because she was at home on maternity leave. But when I was back, I was very much hands-on to be able to give her the relief that she needed. So I would change the nappy, bath him, whatever needed to be done. I think it was that kind of balance, because had it just been, oh, I come from home and be like, oh, I'm too tired, I'm going to bed, those are the sorts of things that could then... That's what could lead women down to, like, the whole element of, like, postnatal depression and things like that, because they just never get a break.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I've had it quite good in terms of, I mean, it's been quite hands-on. So even when Ezra was born, like, during the nights, I guess they usually say, oh, it's the woman that wakes up, but Amit would always wake up with me, because I feel like the nights are the loneliest time. I remember I used to tell Amit, like, I'm not looking forward to the time that it's bedtime, because I know I'm not sleeping, I'm going to be awake, and it's like I have to wait for him to finish feeding before I can close my eyes. But it was good that when Amit was home, he would always wake up with me and then change his nappy afterwards. So it's like we both had our thing to do. So I feel like that really, really helped. So I guess we never spoke about it before in terms of what we would do, but we kind of naturally
And
to work together.
I think you see as well, because you see the strain that it puts on the mum, you know, the element of feeding, the element of like constantly watching the child. So you then try and step in and help wherever you can. So I think that element really helps us to trying to like predefine, oh, I'm going to do this and you're going to do this.
Yeah. But tell us what's real though about raising a child, because that sounds so, you were going to work Monday to Friday, yeah, but you were waking up in the nights. Mm-hmm. So you had, like, I know that if I just wake up like for 10 minutes during the night, I didn't sleep. Like, I'll wake up like, I didn't sleep. No, I had the worst night ever. And I literally have only just been up for like 2 seconds. So like, how, what, like, what is it actually like?
To be honest, it's intense. It is really intense. But mm-hmm. I think I'm really fortunate in the sense that I love my sleep. But if I need to wake up for a reason, like, I can wake up. It's not a problem. Like, I used to randomly do airport trips for like Michelle's parents or uncles, but like midway through the night and things like that. So I'm really good at that, and that's why I feel like I was able to manage. Mm-hmm. And people at work would be like, "Oh my god, no one would say that you have a child, because like we just can't tell on your face that, you know, you haven't slept or anything like that." Mm-hmm. But I think it's a mindset. Whereas if you like tell yourself, oh my god, I haven't slept, I'm so tired, I want like the world to know that I'm really struggling, you're bound to have a really bad day. And mm-hmm. it's just gonna cascade forward, because you're not gonna get a break for like at least like the 2 years. 3 months. At least the
only
first
two, I don't even know, you know.
So like the first 3 months, you literally just have to weather the storm. Mm-hmm. You just have to keep going, because the one moment, like, if you take your foot off the pedal, mm-hmm. you'll just come crashing down.
Wow. Michelle?
What is it really like? So yeah, as Emmett says, the first few weeks, few months, you feel like you're going through the motions, kind of. Like, yeah, you don't even know what you're doing anymore. So like, sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night, I didn't even remember that I had taken him out of the car, or what, like, he might end up being next to me. So I feel like the
she
first few
delirious.
Months were crazy. Yeah,
yeah. Like, literally the right word to use.
We had him at 5 a.m. in the morning. He was so quiet throughout the whole day. It's like, this is a good baby. Hit 9 o'clock, the visitors left.
Oh my
he
goodness.
Would not stop crying, and I wow. felt like, oh my god. We didn't sleep. Like,
yeah,
Amit sat on the chair next to me. At least I got to lie down, but we did not sleep that first night. And I was thinking, what is this? What have I put myself into? And it was literally like, my sister had to come the next day just mm-hmm. Amit went home, changed, yeah, showered, and then slept for like 5 hours.
I didn't sleep in that time.
You didn't sleep for
ages.
Yeah,
from 5 a.m. that he was born, mm-hmm. I didn't sleep until the following day at like 10 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was...
No, even from before that, because he didn't... Whilst
I didn't
I was
sleep
in
through
the night
while she was through the labour as well. Yeah, so
it was just...
Almost like 2 days.
I thought when babies were first born, they just sleep loads and loads.
Well, he slept loads and loads during the day, but yeah, that night, I don't know what happened.
But it's so funny, because as soon as they're born, like, adrenaline kicks in, and it's like, oh my god, I'm so excited, and you have to do the calls, and people come and see, like, visit him. So it's like, oh yeah, this is really great. And then once they go,
like,
and the adrenaline drops, you're like, oh my god, it's just me and Michelle and the baby. Like,
it's intense. It was really, really intense the first few weeks. Like, yeah.
I think there's like, in those first 3 months, like, real things happen where, as Michelle said, like, you could have forgot that you moved him out of the cot into the mm-hmm. bed. You could, like, you, Michelle could be feeding him and she falls asleep. Like,
I fell asleep and he fell. Like,
he,
like,
rolled over.
Thank
on
god.
The bed.
I was feeding him on the other side, mm-hmm. which is where the floor was. And then I just changed him over to burp him or whatever. Yeah. And I fell asleep and he literally fell onto the bed. And I was like, oh my god, my son.
Fell on the right side.
Yeah. thank god. But it's things like that.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, I think that's why it also helped that Amit was sometimes waking up with me, because he would watch me just to make sure
yeah.
that I'm okay. Because I'm just so delirious.
And
I don't know why.
I remember one of the most another vlog which was very popular is one which we filmed like through the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like the first month of parenting, and we decided to vlog through the night to show like people how many times we wake up, what we do, what the routine was. And, you know, that really resonated with people and like gave them a real insight into how it actually is yeah. through the night.
So how many times were you waking up during the night for those first 3 months?
About 3 or 4.
Yeah. Wow. But the first week or two, I felt like Ezra was eating every hour.
Yeah. Oh, Ezra was an eater. He was an eater.
It was just like, he's not sleeping. Yeah.
Wow. They say girls are better. So.
Yeah, so we're hoping.
So girls. What have been some of the worst days, would you say? I know that you've got a vlog video where you almost lost your son.
Yes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There was like a threat, like terrorist attack or something
yeah.
in Britain?
It was actually in Westfields.
In Stratford.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
And you know, it's mm-hmm. after like we've had obviously so many like of these terror threats. Mm-hmm. And I think I was in a Mac store or something, and it was literally like people started running towards us, like run, run, run. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a terrorist in the shopping mall somewhere. So literally, like, I was like, oh my God, I was literally shaking. Ezra was in his pushchair or something. And I was like, oh my gosh, where's my son? I need to try and like move him. Like I panic froze, like that was it. And it was just literally like in this moment, I felt like, oh my gosh, we could die. I think I called Amit and I was like, Amit, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. Amit's on the other line. Like, I don't know if this is the last time we're going to speak. Wow. It was just, it was madness. Yeah, so it was crazy. That day was just really crazy. I think I still have a little bit of anxiety about being like in those kind of spaces. Yeah. But, it just makes you think, this is what some people have actually, they've been
through, yeah,
and they haven't made it out. So it's true.
So true. And we're hearing about it more and more every day, which is even more scary. But I guess to some extent, that's when the responsibility of it all must become so real. Because at that moment, you were thinking, I'm now responsible for his life. Like, obviously, every day you know that. But like in that kind of moment, you're like, oh my goodness, I'm actually responsible. I have to
literally telling everyone, I've got a son, I need to move to, do you know what? You try everything. So yeah, you would literally shield them with your body if you had to.
What about the best days?
I don't know. When he first smiled, probably.
Yeah.
And like when he laughs, it's just like the most amazing thing. And like just seeing him play and like grow, and like now he like counts 1, 2, 3. He says thank you. And it's just like, aww. That's so cute.
What was his first word?
I don't actually know. Let me tell you what. You know, obviously people ask you, oh, first words. I don't count it as a first word because I don't know if he knew what he was consciously saying. Whereas everyone's like, no, it's a first word. But I think it was, what was it?
I can't even remember.
I don't remember right now. But, you know.
Did he say mum or dad first?
He said mum first. He said mum first.
I'll let you have that.
He had to let me because he knows the truth.
But of course, parenting as millennials is its own little thing too, because like we are the generation that are very focused on our careers. We rarely do just our career either, so many people do have the side hustle, like you guys are doing your Woman Meets Motherhood platform as well. You're YouTubers, you're quite active on Instagram, all the rest of it, so you obviously have the other things that you're doing too. How do you make that all work?
I think a lot of it is just, you just have to get on with it. I feel like, again, if you take your foot off the pedal, or if you think, start giving yourself excuses like, oh, I have a son now, so I can't do that. Or,
yes, I can't come to work, I've got a child.
So like things like vlogging have become like really difficult, because the type of vlogging we do is like, you know, we like to like pick a topic and talk about a real like life issue. And sometimes it's like, if Ezra's awake and like running around, it's a bit difficult to have like a real deep conversation with like a baby on the other side of the camera, like throwing toys around. So that has been like a challenge. But I think you also need to get to a point in life where you're not doing it for the satisfaction of like, oh, I'm doing it because I want to get like so many likes, or I want to do it because I want to get so many comments. It's more just, you're doing it because you feel like it's a purpose.
Yeah.
And as long as you do it for, you do it to fulfill your purpose, I think it doesn't matter how often or how much you do it, as long as you make time to do it. Especially if you feel like it's a God-given purpose. 100%. So yeah, that from my end, that's how I kind of deal with it and manage it.
Yeah, you answered that really well. I don't even know what I can answer.
What do you both do, just so our listeners know?
So I work in corporate strategy. I'm an analyst for Barclays.
And I work in construction as a site manager on new build developments.
Nice.
Yes. Amazing. Well, how do you deal sort of from the inconveniences sometimes of just being a parent? I remember when I was at a bus stop and there was a lady who had a pram, and I know she just needed to get something from the corner shop across the road. My girl left the pram there to run across the road to, I don't know, pick up something or get to top up on an oyster or something, and then came back. And I just thought, part of me was like judging her, like, that is so bad. But another part of me, like, when you just want to get that little...
Wait, did she leave the baby in there?
She left the she left the baby in the pram. I should have specified. Yeah. Maybe I have a trusting face. I don't know. I was like, how are you going to just leave your baby just to top up your oyster? But at the same time, I can see that she, in her mind, she's probably thinking about the inconvenience of trying to get a pram across the street into the shop just to top up your oyster when a bus could be coming any moment. So she just left the child there. And it's like, the inconveniences of those kind of things. If you just want to pop to get something from Asda,
it's true.
Is that okay?
How do you even do that? Yeah.
Sometimes, you know what it is? Sometimes in your mind, you tell yourself, oh, yeah, this will be fine. Like, it's like 30 seconds. Yeah. And but then when someone else sees what you're doing and they tell you, like, what were you thinking? And then you're like, oh my god, yeah, what was I thinking? Like, to leave my child on the main road for like 30 seconds, that really wasn't practical. But in your head, it makes sense. So I do get that story.
I'm still in shock. You know what type of people there are in the world. I think to be honest, you just have to plan ahead. I remember once I was driving somewhere with Ezra. So it was just me and Ezra, so he was in his car seat at the front, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's no petrol in the car, what do I do? Because I was like, I can't get out and go inside to pay. So I was like, I need to try and find a pump that you can pay at the pump. I was like, let me just find this. I went to a random petrol station. I was like, please god, please let there be a pay at the pump. And there was, and I was like, thank god, because otherwise I'm literally carrying him with me into the shop. I can't, there's nothing else I can do. But it does make things longer, but you just have to plan ahead. In general, that's what you're gonna have to do.
I'm gonna have to remember that, because part of me is like, 20 seconds, man. He's like, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. Build character. But yeah, just bear that in mind.
So we have to talk about cultures, because of course, Michelle, you are of a Ghanaian background, and Amit, you are of an Indian background. So of course, your worlds have now collided. And I think I read something in the Telegraph. I hope I'm going to get this right. And it said, okay, let me actually make sure I get it right. So it said, indigenous white children. What's indigenous?
As in, I guess, homegrown.
Originally. Okay, yeah. Cool. That they would be outnumbered by mixed race kids by 2037 in state schools in the UK. Yeah. Which I actually think is true. Like, yeah. Genuinely, we are going into a place where, like, to find somebody of one heritage or of one race is kind of becoming quite rare, you know? Like, it's a beautiful thing to just see everybody kind of mix in, and especially somewhere like London, like, it's just so very normal. But in that sense, there is a big, like, narrative that I'm sure many people can relate to in terms of how do you make your two worlds collide for your child? Like, what have you picked from each culture? How are you trying to make them as Indian as they are Ghanaian? Yeah. Talk to us.
So again, I'd probably go back to the fact of you can't really like pre-plan, oh, we're going to do these bits of this culture and these bits of this culture. So it's almost like as things come up, you then try to see, right, okay, how are we going to balance the two? How are we going to make it work? Mm-hmm. Like names, for example, we knew that they'd have he would have a Ghanaian name because of day of the week, and then he would have an Indian name. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay, well, he's already got an Indian name, but he also needs to have, in the Indian culture, he has my name as a middle name.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, well, he's got two Indian names almost and one Ghanaian name. So yeah, like small things like that, you kind of just have to deal with as you go along. And my mum was like, oh, why is the Indian name not first? Like, why is it Ezra first? Why is it not his Indian name is Jay. So it's like, why is it not Jay? Why is it Ezra first? And it's like, what, Ezra's the name we prefer. So that's why it's first. So yeah, small things like that. I feel like if you plan it out in your head too much, when it comes to the moment, you can almost come across too blunt and feel like you're just cutting off your parents, and you've made up your choice in your mind, and that's what you're going to stand by. Whereas I feel like if you're a bit more open and kind of like, oh yeah, let's negotiate what we're gonna do here, it kind of shows that they have the opportunity to have some input.
Yeah
And I think one thing that we've definitely said that we will do is that make sure they go to both countries where they come from, so they know I've been there. I can say I've been there, because I think I was 10 when I first went to Ghana.
Wow,
I was like,
okay.
Before then, if you ask me, I'd be like, do I even know where my parents are from? I don't. So it's just like things like that. Just like try and make sure that you do, and introduce them to both foods so they know. Like just things like that. And I think, to be honest, the Indian culture has a lot more things to actually do, whereas with Ghanaians, I don't think we actually do a lot apart from when it comes to like our weddings and our funeral, like that.
But like
naming
ceremonies, for example.
Ceremony. So things like that, yes, we've taken on. And then like with Indian things as they come along, because they've got a lot.
That's what I was about to say, because I'm like, if you're taking on both of the traditional things that we do for children, I feel like you'll always be having a ceremony. Yeah, like, so, can you even afford that?
But I think what's also helped is, because obviously with Indian culture, a lot of things are tied to the religion. So we try and find what isn't so religious, mm-hmm. and then try and introduce him that way. And yeah. I think it's also good that he's also around both grandparents, so they can yeah. help in terms of teaching him. And I think he's going to learn Gujarati very soon.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What about you? What were you saying about
you? Oh, God.
I mean, do I even know?
When you're trying to speak like Gujarati, I don't know. I hear you. So what have you done for him in an Indian context, and what have you done for him in a Ghanaian context? I'm quite curious to know, like...
Mm. So Ghanaian context, we did the naming mm-hmm. and dedication.
He had an Indian baby shower.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he had like a normal baby shower and an Indian baby shower. What does that look like? It's like a bit more of like a cultural element where like women from... It's very much just women that go from the two families mm-hmm. would come and kind of like... just share like blessings, share wisdom to the mother.
Give money.
Yeah. It's almost like they sow a seed into the pregnant mum, the pregnant wife's yeah. life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just that kind of vibe. It's a lot more personal, a lot more intimate between mm-hmm. just like mums, basically.
Yeah. But like, what about like the day to day? Because like, for example, as a Ghanaian, one thing I know that I have to instill in my kids is that like if somebody gives you something the next day you have to call back
like, yeah,
that's you know about them ones yeah,
yeah at times
just that defiant rebel. But yeah, I know, and I still, and it's funny because when your parents instill something in you from young, even when you're older you can make your own decisions, you will mm-hmm. still do the yeah. exact same thing. So like in whatever context, even at work, like it's inbuilt in me that like if somebody has done something for me that's like maybe to some extent over and beyond, I'll send them a polite email the next day or whatever, and I'll always have that kind of like thankful thing about me that they just yeah kind of instill in you. So it's like do you add those things into the day-to-day as well? Like
yeah, I do think so. I think as well, because obviously we're of different cultures, we're kind of like learning together, so it's like I teach him mm-hmm. as we're doing stuff, or yeah. he teaches me as we're doing stuff.
Yeah.
So I think in that same way it will kind of filter down to our kids, because yeah. like as mummy and daddy are learning, you're learning too.
Yeah, yeah.
So but I think we definitely think that we do have to make more of a conscious effort to find out why we do things in our cultures true. To be able to explain yeah. it yeah. to our kids, because otherwise true. When they grow up, I feel like it's very easy, especially when you're from different backgrounds, to forget why you do certain things mm. or forget mm-hmm. what you're supposed to do. Because now yeah. I don't even know what Ezra's going to do when he gets married. I mean, yeah. what tradition is he going to follow? Like, I don't know. But that's the thing, because you don't want it to be a thing where it's like your parents die and then you all of a sudden we don't have a culture anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, we kind of have to make a conscious effort to learn ourselves as well.
Yeah.
And there's small things like in the Ghanaian culture, when you go into a room and you're greeting people, you start from the right and work your way around.
I avoid those ones. I'm not about to offend everybody. I don't want curses on my life. It's okay.
Because I still don't know. My mum will be like pushing me, and I'm like, oh, I don't know.
And then even with like the Indian culture, like when you meet someone older than you, you're meant to like bow to them mm-hmm. as a sign of respect. Not every time you meet them, but maybe if you meet them for the first time, or if it's like a significant event like your birthday or Diwali or something like that, you'll just bow to them as a sign of respect and honor that they're someone who's older than you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose small things like that mm-hmm. Really help, and it kind of really shows the two families like, okay, like even though it's, you know, it's a mix of culture, we can see that our culture is still being shared. It's not like they've just abandoned it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot about culture, but what about in terms of faith? Because I guess I always had this thing like you try to instill faith into your child, but ultimately it will have to be their own decision.
Yeah.
Faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you kind of deal with that? How are you kind of hoping to instill faith into your
children? Funny you say that, because that's one thing that I was obviously really scared of, because obviously mm. we're both Christians, but his grandparents on Amit's side are obviously Hindu, so mm-hmm. it's kind of like I'm really scared that what if he doesn't. But it's like I guess you can't think like that, because at the end of the day Amit was brought up in a Hindu home mm-hmm. but he still found God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think we just have to live our lives in a way that yeah. it's like he wants to know the God that mummy and daddy serve mm-hmm. as his own God.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can't force them to do those things. Yeah. But I think it's just little things that we make sure he's at every service that we're at, so he sees mum and dad serving in the church from young, so he knows, oh, that's a normal thing to yep. do, there's nothing wrong with that. So I think it's just things like that where it's like you can't force faith on them, but you show them your life, show them how you've lived your yeah, life and what faith has done for you, and they will naturally go in that way.
And I think, like, our bishop said, like, something quite powerful is that when you have children, like, you can't earn them their salvation.
Mm.
It's something that they must go out and pursue themselves, but you can only direct them. So everything, the way you live your life and the things that you do, just simply have to direct them along the right path.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be contradictory to what you want them to believe, mm-hmm. or what you want them, the faith that you want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the most you can do.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very true. Because when I think about my upbringing, like, my childhood is a blur of church services. And mission to London, Benny Hinn, Maurice Cirillo, those were, you know, at school, kids would be like, oh, what did you do over summer? I went to the park. I literally went to a convention.
Wow.
Some church convention. And thanks, Mum.
Yeah. No, but for me, it's like strange because I grew up in a Christian home, 100%, but I do think that my home was a lot more liberal. But it does kind of go, it boils down to character, because regardless, I feel like what my parents did very well was that I had a lot of respect for them.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they might not tell me X, Y, Z, I simply never wanted to disappoint them because I just respected them. There was mm-hmm. no fear. It was like how you wouldn't hurt a friend, because I'm not fearful of Esther, but I respect her, I love her, I'm just gonna do the right thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think they just wrapped me in so much love and just awe and respect that just made me think I can make a choice right now. I can do what I know the Bible says, or I can go outside and do what the world says.
Yeah.
But I choose to do what is going to make my parents happy, till you start to understand that actually I want to please God.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? So it's kind of building that kind of relationship with them where they kind of respect you first, and they'll see mm-hmm. God through that. So
yes,
I kind of
exactly.
get
yeah.
what you're saying and completely.
And I think to add to that, I think there's a big, like, social issue that's kind of brewing, where people in this day and age are very quick to say, oh, thank God for X, Y, or Z achievement, or, you know, on Instagram they'll, you know, God has done this for me, God has done that for me. And it is, sometimes it's not reflective of, you know, their personal, like, walk with God.
Yeah.
And almost like it's just being painted as a picture of, like, oh yeah, this, you know, I just want to give God a shout out, and everyone starts thinking, oh, that's so nice, but it's like not reflective of how their walk with Christ is. And that's not how you want Christ or how you want God to be perceived by your child.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to actually have a genuine relationship, as opposed to, oh yeah, you know, anytime that something good happens, just be like, oh, thank God, and, you know, move on to the next kind of big thing in your life.
Sorry, just to add to that, I don't want to preach here, but actually on Instagram I saw, I don't know if you know Lisa Bevere, I think she posted like a quote, and it said, well done is better than well said. And I think that that's just, it just epitomizes what we're talking about, in terms of, you can say all the things in the world, you can tell your child, yep, Jesus is the way, the truth, and that, but if they don't see that how you are living your life is the way it's done, they're not gonna understand that, well, you're just saying words to me, so the words don't mean anything until I see you do it.
Yeah.
So I think that's just really important as parents. If you live your life in a certain way, your kids will naturally want to grow up like that. And,
but
yeah.
Is there any guilt attached to that? Because on days when you're not living your life in a certain way, or when maybe you're arguing and there's tension and there's, you know, you shouldn't have said that thing or whatever else, like, do you feel a sense of like, oh man, like, I've got a kid now, I need to set a different kind of example?
Yeah, I think definitely you do. But then it also just means that once you do make those mistakes, you do what it takes to rectify them. Because you also need to show your kids that your life
you're
is not going to be perfect. So if it's a thing where you fail in an area, just know how to recover afterwards. Yeah. Don't let it be a thing where you think you always have to put on a perfect facade. They need to see that side as well.
I agree.
So I think, that's what's really important.
And I think that's so important, because I think that's something our parents did terribly. Like, God bless them all. But, like, they always wanted to be our superheroes. And it's like, as you get older, you suddenly see that, oh my God, you're so flawed. But it took me so long to understand or know, because for so long they shelter you from their flaws.
Yeah.
And like, a part of me would have just wished that, like, at 5, tell me that you're not great. So then I won't get to 21 and be like, what? Like, you know? So I think, just doing that daily with them is really, really important. And something that I definitely want to embody, because I've seen how it's affected me not being exposed to that enough.
Mm-hmm.
And how has having children sort of affected your relationship with God, in terms of having the time to have your quiet times and your devotions? Because I know for me, I need that time to just be in my room by myself. Let me just pray. Let me just read my Bible. Let me just have that quiet time. I can't imagine doing that with a 3-month-year-old, a 2-year-old, a husband.
I honestly say that is really hard.
Yeah.
I feel like one thing that is not said enough is that, especially, I guess, in your youth or in your singlehood, like, that is a time where you can dedicate most of your time to God. Not to say that, obviously, once you have kids, you can't. But I felt like in, like, the first few months, because I was obviously going through this cycle of I'm not sleeping and I'm not doing these things, I do feel like I fell off a bit because it's like I'm not spending as much time with God as I could have. So I feel like you just have to be more intentional about your time, about spending that with God. Because, yeah, it is harder to find those times. And sometimes it's just about incorporating those times with your child, even if they are disturbing you. The fact that they're hearing you pray, like, let them hear those things and let them see you reading your word, let them see you doing all those things. That does help. I can, later on down the line, it's a thing where they can do that with you constructively. So, yeah, but I do feel like I didn't think it was going to be that hard, but I felt like in the beginning it was literally like I felt like I didn't have any time for God.
It's true. And I think, again, it goes to back to the whole fact of, like, you actually appreciate church a lot more. Like, you feel like, oh my God, I can actually go and, like, connect, because it's like, I know personally through the week I haven't had that chance, haven't had that opportunity to kind of take time out of the day and, you know, just really sit down and listen. So when you do go to church, it's like, oh my God, yeah, I really need this. Like, I can't wait to go. Same on, like, Friday when you go to a prayer meeting, it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to go, because I actually just really need a bit of encouragement. I need to hear the word, really need to fellowship. Like, for me, when, even though, like, we weren't, you know, our personal time with God probably went down slightly, it was like any time I'd come into, like, a worship setting, that would be like my, that's my zone. That's when I know, like, okay, here it's just me and him. Like, everything else kind of switches off. So that's for me, that I think that's how I've grown, where although my personal time has kind of reduced slightly in that moment, my worship went to another level, because when I was in the moment, I was so much more available, so much more wanting to be in that presence.
I always wonder with parenting, is it one of those things that, like, does it bind you together more, or does it expose your differences? Because I always feel like so many tensions must come forth from you having different upbringings, being completely different individuals, and now trying to do this united thing. Because I feel like people will say, okay, marriage is one goal, but I feel like a child is such an obvious kind of example of that one goal that you're both trying to achieve. And I just imagine it must bring up so many different things. What are some of the tensions that you found trying to parent as two separate individuals?
I don't know if we've come across them just yet. I think we're still we're now at the stage where it's like more discipline for Ezra, because he's now becoming a bit more like he's his own person and you can't control him. But I don't know. I always thought that before I would be the harsh one. But Amit's actually really tough on him. And sometimes it's like, Amit, please, just calm down. He doesn't know what he's doing. So I think it's like things like, sometimes it's things like that where it's just like, Amit just like, he won't take certain things.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you argue on those things. It's like, he's just a child. Like, let him go. Yeah. Like, you understand those mums that are sometimes, oh, no, please. Like, you understand that now. So I think, I don't know if there's anything major.
Yeah, and I would suppose it's just like how you approach it, because for me, like, discipline, I feel like if I discipline him now, it'd be so, I know, okay, yeah, maybe he's still understanding things, but it's so much easier now when he's at a younger age than if I wait until he's like 6, 7 or 8. True. And then you're trying to discipline them when they're in school and they've got so much, like, outside influences.
Yeah.
You're then trying to discipline your child, and given that most of the day they spend at school or they spend out or whatever, it then becomes so much more difficult. That's why I feel like I choose to do it now, and that, as I said, like, that's a difference that we have. But then there's, like, small things, like, you know, I really want Ezra to become, like, a Formula One driver, a Formula One racer.
I can't see my eyes.
It's dangerous.
And, yeah, Michelle would be like, it's dangerous, and I'm like, yeah, but there's so many other careers out there that are dangerous. If we're truly, like, you know, if we truly love God and believe in God, then it's like our child will be protected.
You're actually moulding him into this Formula One driver.
That's the thing I don't like as well. I don't like the whole, like, you know, you're going to do this. You're definitely going to do this. Just let him find what he likes. You know what I mean? Just watch him. See what he
But you just have to navigate him.
I like navigating children. Yeah,
so push them in the right direction.
But it must be a huge compromise, because I'm sure there's some things that it's like, I want it to be this way, but you just have to maybe shrug at the end and be like, okay, fine, like, that's how they want to do it, and I'm just gonna have to let them do it.
Yeah, I think sometimes you just have to see it as, if it's not harming my child, why am I fighting so hard for it? Like, you have to understand, like, at the end of the day, is it worth this argument, or is it just because I want what I want? So yeah, think that's what it is.
And sometimes it ends up becoming an argument because you're so worked up in yourself because of, you know, it might have been a really long night because Ezra was awake too much, or, you know, you're just really annoyed because you haven't had enough sleep or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then any small thing just turns into a massive argument. It gets blown out of proportion. And then when you think about it, it's like, it doesn't really have that much of an impact anyway, so let's just do it.
So how are you keeping the source in your marriage alive with another human being and soon to be two human beings in it?
I don't know how we do it, but we keep the source alive. We definitely keep the source alive.
It's one of those things where people say that, like, oh, once you have children, you don't have time for yourself. But in fact, I think it brings you closer.
Yeah.
Not just because you come together as parents, but because you now have two people who need to make an input for your child. Like, it's a joint effort. It's not just Michelle's effort, not just mine. So you actually interact a lot more as well. And a lot of the time you start interacting about things which you probably have never discussed before.
Yeah.
So you actually start touching, like, new grounds and discussing new things and really actually understanding, like, deeper thought processes that your partner has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think also, when you see your partner as a parent, it's like a new love that you find as well. Because it's actually quite an attractive thing, I'd say.
I just tell them, girl.
Yeah, I just know what they say. But yeah, so I think honestly, yeah, that. And I think also you're more intentional by the time that you guys do spend together. Because I remember, like, our anniversary this year, I was like, this is the best anniversary I've ever had in my life.
Mm.
But it was just more because it was time where we've got alone now and it's like Ezra's not around, so it just felt like, for me, it was heaven.
Mm.
So I think it's just things, little things like that. So we don't really have date nights anymore, which I've been telling Amy about.
Fix it.
Yeah. But yeah, just making time for each other is how you keep it alive. Yeah.
Amazing. One bit of advice that you would give to new parents?
Trust God.
Love that.
And don't cry over sleep.
Be yourselves and let parenthood be a journey, like, be a personal journey.
Mm.
Don't try and replicate or copy what someone else has done just because you think it's worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just the whole social element can be such a pressure on, like, oh, this person's done this, let me do that as well. But it's just your own journey, like, just embrace it, and, you know, God will give you the wisdom to take on every day as it comes.
Yeah. I have one last question, actually, and it was just about how you're going to navigate technology, because this is something that I find petrifying. Like, I don't like social media. I use it because you kind of have to. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it has more bad than good, personally. But it's difficult because there's the whole aspect of, like, sharing your kids online, which is something that you do. I don't even know how I feel about that. And then it's like, you know, I have some friends that are like, well, I'm going to buy my children iPads from, like, 5. And I'm like, why do they need to have an iPad? Mm. Like, I don't know. I just have this very sheltered thing when it comes to technology because it has just caused so many different issues, you know?
Yeah.
How are you looking to kind of go about that?
If I'm honest, I was probably like you before I had Ezzy in terms of, like, I remember, like, I think someone asked us, so, do you want an iPad for Ezzy? He's like, no, I don't want that. He can read books, kind of thing. But I think you have to be wise in terms of what are you using that thing for. So, for example, I've got an iPad that I don't use. But now if it's a thing where I'm using it for Ezzy, it's only because he needs to watch something and stay still whilst I'm doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I want him on it all day or want him to learn how to use it or that. So I think it's just being wise about those things and what you are introducing them to. And I don't know, I think I'm different from Amit in terms of how much I put on social media, but maybe that's another tension. I don't know, we haven't had an argument about that. I don't really mind it so much, but I think I'm just a little bit more, I guess, to myself on social media. But Amit just likes to share his life with the world, but I guess it's your purpose behind it.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's your purpose, and it probably is a cultural thing for me as well. Like, very much our parents are like, no, you have to be very private.
Yeah.
The devil and the eyes and the witch and the craft, and you know,
oh, yes.
So it probably is still, like, fully ingrained in me, and I don't even know it. But it's just that thing of, like, it breeds a lot of comparison as well. Like you said, like, do it yourself, do it how you want to do it, and so forth. And, like, knowing your purpose behind why you're sharing is so, so important. Mm-hmm. Don't just do it just to show everybody this. So-called perfect life, this so-called 2.5 family or whatever, like, yeah, just do it how you want to do it and know why you're sharing.
Thank you.
But thank you so much, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on Meet the Millennials. We always close out on a scripture, and today's scripture is Psalm 127 verse 3. It says, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Amen.
Amen.
So that's another Meet the Millennials wrapped. Patels, what should we look forward to on your platforms?
Seeing baby number 2.
Yay!
So yeah, we know we're having a girl, so I think everyone's just excited to see how she'll be like, mm-hmm. you know, and I think we're excited. So it'll just be interesting to see what she'll be like, and just, you know, more vlogs about real life issues that mm-hmm. we go through as parents, as an interracial couple, and yeah, just further raising awareness mm-hmm. that we can all come together through Christ.
Yeah.
So you can still send us an email and let us know what you thought on that episode on parenting. Follow us at Premier Gospel for updates and tweet us with the hashtag MTM podcast.
Indeed. Yeah. If you want to share some of your parenting stories, some of your struggles, your highs, your lows, we're always here to listen. Can't advise, but we can listen. Don't forget to send us a screen grab that you're listening. Tag us at Premier Gospel, at Elena Boateng,
at Esther Jenny.
And we'll be sure to share it on our stories as well. So review the podcast for us, rate us, like us, share us, all that good stuff, guys. Thank you so much.
And now I'm just going to say a short little prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for today. Thank you that for teaching us about parenting. And I pray that you will bless Michelle and Amit as they go on to have their second child. And I pray that for everybody listening who might be single parents or who may be wanting to have children in the future, I pray that you will calm any anxieties that they may have and help them to just continue to trust you. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.
Amen.
This is Meet the Millennials.
Hi guys, you're here with Cassie Loco.
Carl Loco.
Hi, I'm Rini Lee.
Hey, I'm Pastor Nathan from Hope Dealers.
And it's Pastor Kwame here from Hope Dealers as well.
Hi, I'm Ify Alexis Lee.
Hi, I'm Muyua.
And I'm Lola.
And you're listening to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennials.
Because it's honest conversations about things that the body of Christ is perhaps too scared to talk about.
And you young people don't know what you're doing with your life.